In the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen. If you think that was a long gospel reading, just wait for next week. Palm Sunday is lengthy and theatrical and wonderful. This morning, we have the most memorable story from the Bible that we don't remember. It's not the gospel, it's Ezekiel. We have Ezekiel, this Old Testament prophet. He meets God in the middle of an old battlefield. The story opens with, "The hand of the Lord came upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me down in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones." And you know we're in for a good story when you hear that line, right? You know that we are. It's compelling. It's a little creepy. But there is this inherent power in that first line. The hand of the Lord came upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord and set me down in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. I'm reading this, and my mind is immediately drawn to two summers ago, backpacking through the winds, and I came upon the spinal column and the skull of some large ungulate, a mule deer or an elk. And I remember looking closely at the vertebra and the skull of this animal, looking for signs of tooth marks or other trauma, wondering what befell this animal, what its end was like, and how long its remains had been there under the sun, and how long they might remain there still. And Ezekiel knows. He knows what befell these bones of men in the valley. It was the enemy of Israel. His vision puts him in the middle of a valley of dry bones of Israelite soldiers brought down by the Chaldeans. The story goes on to say, "He led me around and among them, a lot of bones. There were bones all over the plain, dry bones bleached by the sun." And I love that. Ezekiel wants us to know these bones, the bones he's walking around, the ones that he's walking in and among, have been there a long time. They're dry and bleached. The scene, the vision, this part of it is a vision of despair. His soldiers, his people, his culture, his way of life, his way of thinking and being is not just dead, it's long dead. And then there's this wonderful question, mortal, human, son of man, bro, Ezekiel, can these bones live? And Ezekiel gives this really faithful, dialed response to this deep question. He would make every Sunday school teacher and every seminary professor proud. He would, he says, you know, only you know whether or not these bones can live. If you decide they can, I suppose they can, but that isn't up to me. A man, a human, someone who is not God, that's not my job, that's your job. And God meets Ezekiel the prophet, right in his sweet spot, right in Ezekiel's sweet spot. Ezekiel says to God that it's not his job to bring life to these bones. He's a prophet, not God. It's not his job to bring life to things that aren't living. And God meets Ezekiel in Ezekiel's sweet spot. He says, well then, Ezekiel the prophet, be yourself, Ezekiel. Ezekiel the prophet, then prophesy to these bones. Then do your thing. Be yourself. And when you do your thing, you make sure to tell these bones that God said that they would live. And make sure that's what you prophesy, prophet. When you do, tell them, tell these bones to live. You and I, Ezekiel, you and I, prophet, you and I will do this thing together. We are co-creators. And likely to Ezekiel's surprise, even as a faithful person, they do. They do live. Bone comes to bone to sinew to flesh, and his vision, these skeletal remains become full-bodied humans, Israelites, Ezekiel's people. And God doesn't stop there. He doesn't. He tells the prophet to prophesy to these bones that not only will they live, but also they will flourish. They will live well and live abundantly, and they will do it in their own land. That is the most memorable story in the Bible that we don't remember. And it's amazing, right? It is. It's like something off the big screen. A prophet plopped down in the middle of a valley of bones, his dead brothers and sisters long dead, and he begins to prophesy, to do what he does. And they come back to life, and not just back to life to suffer and struggle and die, but they come back to flourish, which is amazing. Maybe we stop there, right? Beautiful story. Amazing story, fit for the big screen for sure. That would hold my attention for 90 to 120 minutes, no problem. And that's it. We walk away. Or maybe we stop somewhere in the winds, somewhere on the CDT, pack off, squatting down, next to the spinal column of one of God's beautiful creatures, dead for some time, dead long enough to lose hair and hide and sinew at least, dead long enough because, you know, dead is dead. We connect with both the beauty of the design and the despair that the design no longer functions to support life. We think this is a fantastic story and one that can take us to that place where we've had to look death square in the face, in nature, in a hospital room, in a loved one's house, or situations even more despairing than any of those. This is a story about death and despair and God's fantastic interaction with a prophet, far too fantastic for us to relate to really relate to, because we know that dead things don't come back to life, at least without a whole lot of luck and maybe a defibrillator. Lovely story, but that's it. Maybe that's where we leave it. And if that's where we leave it, that's where we leave it. But I believe there's something more here. Something beautiful and practical amidst the despairing and the fantastic. Here's what I see. Here's what I see in this story. I see despair. I do. It's in the story and it's all around us for sure. And I see God active. I see God picking us up and putting us exactly where we need to be. It may not be where we want to be, but it's certainly where what we have, who we are, what we do can be of some co-creative influence upon that which looks despairing, putting us in a place where we might spread love and kindness and compassion and nurture and care and healing. And then even in our studied, well-formed human reluctance, no God, only you God, not little old me God, gotta be somebody else God, even in our practice, well-studied, well-formed reluctance to participate, God simply encourages us to do what we do, to be who we are. You are a prophet, then prophesy. You are a preacher, then preach. You are a teacher, then teach. You're a doctor, then heal. You're a mother, then mother. You're a journalist, then seek after the truth. You're a judge, then arbitrate. You're a lawyer, then advocate. You're a grandparent, then spoil those grandbabies. You're a community, then serve. You are a church. Then be the church. Embody what it means to be God's partner, God who is love. Embody what it means to be love's partner right where you are, right in this valley, melting snow, probably some dry bones, growing grass. This is our story. There is more to this story, isn't there? Can these bones live? They can not just live, flourish. But they'll do it with our partnership. We needn't be anybody we're not. The expectation is just to be who we already are. And who are we then? We're the church that serves. We're the church that gives. We're the church that thinks. We are the church that loves, not to the exclusion of others, of course, but no doubt that is who we are. Amen.